Mountain State Mysteries contains adult content that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. I'm your host, Mark Covey, and this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case I have for you today is one that theoretically happened in my backyard. A case that has always made me wonder who would kill a teacher the day before her wedding. This is the case of Cynthia Jane Miller. August 27th, 1981 started out as a normal day for Cynthia. She was decorating her room at Park Middle School. She was just getting ready for the new school year. She had a hard few years behind her, and she was really looking forward to a new start. In 1979, she made the hard decision to divorce her husband, Michael Cole. I mean, at 27, she became a school teacher who had completed her bachelor's degree in education and had a master's degree in math from Concord College. After her divorce, Cynthia purchased a home at 103 Miller Street in Beckley. The home is about 5 minutes away from Park Middle School. She rented out the basement as an apartment for an additional income to a woman named Terry Boland. Cynthia also sold Avon for another income. Cynthia met Gary O'Neill, who was a city policeman in the nearby town of Leicester, West Virginia. Gary moved in with Cynthia by the summer of 1981. The two decided to get married, and to save the confusion from explaining the name change to her students in the middle of the school year, Cynthia wanted to get married before school even started. The two decided to hold a small ceremony on August 28th, 1981. Sadly, Cynthia never got to make it to her wedding. Like I said, August 27th was a normal day for Cynthia, so let's deep dive into her day. She spent the first part of the day decorating her new room at Park Middle School. She left the school around noon for a doctor's appointment, and then she went home. She stayed there until 4 p.m. She left for a little bit to go visit her dad at Montgomery Ward's in Beckley. After his shift, he actually stopped by her house to make a few repairs to a garage door. He stayed at her home until 6 p.m. At 7 p.m., Gary O'Neill arrived at the house while Cynthia worked on some Avon orders. They were excited about their wedding happening the next day. Gary decided to go visit some family in Princeton, West Virginia, which is about a 45-minute drive from Miller Street. He left the home around 8 p.m. and said he would return around 11:30 p.m. Their downstairs tenant, Terry Boland, arrived home at 8:30 p.m. She had some trouble opening the door, so she asked Cynthia for help, so she went down and helped. And then she went back upstairs. That's the last time anyone would see Cynthia Miller alive. Terry Boland went to bed around 9 p.m. She heard Cynthia walking down the steps to their shared laundry room. Then she heard her walk back upstairs. After this, Cynthia called the regional Avon manager to let them know about some issues on her orders. Cynthia remained on the phone with her regional manager for about 20 minutes. 10 minutes later, around 9:30 p.m., Gary tried to call Cynthia to let her know that he would be back later than expected. The phone rang, but Cynthia didn't pick it up. He finally left to go home around 11 p.m. Around 12:40 a.m., Gary arrived home. Cynthia's car was in the driveway. He noticed that the front porch light wasn't on, which was odd because Cynthia always left the light on if she knew he was coming home. So he used the flame from his lighter to guide his way up and unlock the front door. That's when he met Cynthia's lifeless body, only 2 feet away, laying on the floor. You're listening to Mountain State Mysteries, West Virginia's true crime podcast that digs into the missing persons, homicide cases, survival stories, and the mysteries of the Mountain State and beyond. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow the show, download, and rate it on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts. Gary noticed that the back of Cynthia's head was soaked in blood. He was in shock, but he still managed to call 911, then start CPR on Cynthia. Police arrived not too long after the call, and they tried to resuscitate Cynthia, but sadly, it didn't help. Cynthia was declared dead at the scene. Gary was left distraught and disbelieving what happened. It was discovered that Cynthia had been shot, and cops were quick to rule out Gary, said Sergeant Morgan Bragg. According to the reports, Cynthia had been shot in the head four times with a 25 caliber pistol. Two of the shots were from close range, and the other two were shot with the gun being pressed to her head. Blood spatter was found in the home, along with Cynthia's own 25 caliber pistol, but it was ruled out as the murder weapon. The house and the entire neighborhood was searched, but the murder weapon was never found. Police saw no sign of forced entry and no sign of a struggle inside the house. Nothing was taken, and Cynthia's body showed no sign of sexual assault. What was found to be missing was Terry Boland. When she was questioned, she said that she returned to the neighborhood around 1 a.m., but she decided to leave when she found out what happened to Cynthia. Terry moved out from the downstairs apartment the next day. She told the Raleigh Register, quote, "I didn't live there too long, and I wanted my privacy, so I made a point to not be too friendly. I don't live there anymore. I moved out today, back to my mother's house where it's safe," end quote. Terry said that there was an open vent leading from the upstairs down to her apartment, and that she could hear normal conversations upstairs. The only sound she heard on the night of the murder was the phone ringing once and Cynthia walking around, which actually got me thinking, if you could hear all of that, how could you not hear the gunshots? So investigators returned to the home and fired several shots at the location where Cynthia was found with a 25 caliber pistol. Officers were also downstairs in the apartment, and they said the shots were very loud in the apartment, so loud that Terry probably would have heard them, even if she was asleep. According to Terry, she never saw or heard anything that night. Although police were skeptical, they never saw her more as a person of interest. You're listening to Mountain State Mysteries, West Virginia's true crime podcast that digs into the missing persons, homicide cases, survival stories, and the mysteries of the Mountain State and beyond. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow the show, download, and rate it on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts. Cynthia's body was removed from the crime scene and taken to Raleigh General Hospital for an autopsy. The following day, her body was taken to the state medical examiner in Charleston, West Virginia. Both the Raleigh County and state medical examiner said that Cynthia was shot at approximately 9:30 p.m. and likely died from her wounds within an hour and a half, which, if you remember, Terry was in the house at the time, but she heard nothing, which, in all honesty, I find it to be a little off, because Cynthia's next-door neighbor, Barry Webb, reported hearing what he thought was four firecrackers around the time police thought the murder took place. However, Terry, who lived in the basement, who could hear the phone ringing, heard nothing? This makes no sense to me. Webb said that he had a clear view of Cynthia's home, and he looked outside to see if he could see what the noise was, but he saw nothing. He did tell police that he heard the shots. Three were loud, and that one was muffled. Over the next few months, investigators spent time conducting interviews of anyone who had any connection with the case. They created a huge file that sadly didn't contain a single clue that could help them solve the case. Cynthia Jane Miller was laid to rest at Blue Ridge Memorial Gardens on Monday, August 30th, 1981, the same day the new school year started. Typically, this is where we'd end on an episode, but Cynthia's case doesn't end just yet. Her case dragged on for months, turning into years. Then it sadly went cold. In April of 1982, Chief Police Thomas Durrett contacted the Behavior Science Unit of the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia. He requested a psychological profile in the case of Cynthia Miller. Officials from the BSU responded within a few months, but what they sent was more disturbing than helpful. They emphasized that they lacked enough information to complete a full profile, but they did offer these five psychological theories concerning the case of Cynthia Miller. 1. The victim knew her killer very well. 2. The victim had recently rejected her killer. 3. The number of gunshot wounds to the victim's head is a sign of overkill, as well as an anger on part of the perpetrator. 4. It's very likely in a case like this, the perpetrator had already been interviewed by police and appeared to be extremely cooperative. 5. The perpetrator would appear to be distraught over the victim's death. This was not merely a role. While he hated the victim at the time of the murder, he also loved her very much. You're listening to Mountain State Mysteries, West Virginia's true crime podcast that digs into the missing persons, homicide cases, survival stories, and the mysteries of the Mountain State and beyond. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow the show, download, and rate it on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts. In 2019, Crime Stoppers of West Virginia announced that they were forming a new multi-agency task force, and Cynthia's murder would be the first case they would focus on. They offered a reward of $10,000 for information leading to the resolution of her case. On May 8, 2019, the Beckley Police Department announced they had reviewed new information which could lead to a break 36-year-old cold case. Sergeant Morgan Bragg stated, quote, "The information they received reinforced an original theory that there may have been some relationship between Miller and her assailant," end quote. On October 13, 2020, the Raleigh County Prosecuting Attorney's Office announced that a man was indicted for the murder of Cynthia Jane Miller. Earl James Robbins was charged with the August 1981 murder of Cynthia Jane Miller. Robbins was actually indicted by the same grand jury in October of 2020 for the abduction, kidnapping, and sexual assault of a 13-year-old girl in Beckley in 1980. For my research, I haven't been able to find out if these cases were related in any way. Robbins pleaded not guilty to the 5-count indictment. In a federal civil suit filed by no one other than himself against former Raleigh County prosecuting attorney Kristen Keller, Robbins made a number of complaints at omissions in the case, including a detailed account of the day Cynthia was murdered, how he learned about it, and his cooperation with the police in the days following her murder. On the day Cynthia was murdered, Robbins said her fiancé Gary had came to his house over an unpaid parking ticket, and just moments later, he said he was walking outside and happened to be at Gary's house on Miller Street talking to a woman. In the complaint, he said, "I never asked who she was. There was no reason to do so. I said, I'll take care of the ticket. No animosity, no bad words between me and him." Robin said that he learned about the murder from a friend, Gene Jackson, the following morning while walking down Smoot Ave, which is just seconds away from Miller Street. A week later, Robbins claimed he was confronted by police over the unpaid parking ticket and later the murder. He said that he was asked to do a polygraph, which he did. He said he just assumed it was over. He said later that he was informed by his son through letter that he and one other person knew who killed Cynthia, but in a mysterious turn of events, his son died in 2017 before he could tell him. In his complaint, he sought relief from federal court in the form of those bringing charges to be arrested and pay $50 million to the petitioner and his children. Since the filings, Robin has sent the U.S. Southern District Court additional documents asking the court to pay his $400 filing fee and claiming that prison guards stole $660 from his stimulus payment. Attorney G. Todd Hugg has since been assigned to the case. He filed a motion for discovery on May 20th, 2021. So, I know you're probably asking yourself, how did all of this happen in a 40-year-old cold case? Well, authorities say details cannot be released yet as they prepare for the trial. Bragg said, quote, "This took a lot of reaching out. Obviously, you know our suspect is in California, and he's moved a lot. We had to follow that trail." End quote. An extradition hearing will be held at a later date in California before Robbins can be brought back to West Virginia. As of 2024, Robbins has only been indicted on the murder charges of Cynthia Jane Miller. The second more updates become available, you know we'll be in your feed, bringing you those updates. We'll be back next week with a brand new case. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, rate, and download the show on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, all at Mountain State Mysteries. For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.